Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Kroger CEO, what's good for him is certainly not in the cards for his employees. Meanwhile, the growing list of states now shortchanging the jobless. And today on the show, the latest from the National Treasury Employees Union and the organization Good Jobs First. Welcome to the Monday, May 17th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. We certainly have a five-star guest today. Tony Reardon will be joining us. He is president of the National Treasury Employees Union, and they represent about 150,000 workers all around the country, 34 departments and agencies. And today, we're going to spend a whole lot of time on IRS workers. Turns out that in the American Families Plan, which was announced by the president a couple of weeks ago, it calls for $80 billion over 10 years for enforcement activities at the IRS. The Biden administration estimates the added investment will generate $700 billion over 10 years by making sure the IRS has the resources to properly audit even the most complicated and complex returns from corporations, from businesses, estates, and higher income individuals. And this is appropriate for today because today is actually, even though it's May 17th, it's like April 15th, which is tax day. Your tax is due today, and it was postponed, given an extra month because of the pandemic. Well, for years, Tony's union has alerted Congress to the damage done by a decade of budget cuts at the IRS. And what's happened, essentially, they don't have the people to go after the big guys. Yeah. And we're talking a whole lot of money that could build our infrastructure. And that's where Biden is going with this. We'll also take a look at what has changed for federal employees and their unions. It was not pretty during the Trump administration. Has Biden been able to reverse all the damage done? We'll find out from Tony. Federal employees, are they still teleworking? How will their health and safety be protected when federal offices reopen and they are called back into their offices? So we'll discuss all of these things with Tony Reardon as our first guest. Christine Wen will be joining us later in the show. On behalf of a great organization, they've been around since 1998, Good Jobs First. We've had them on many, many times. Christine is the project coordinator. Her work focuses on government disclosure of tax abatements and their impact on public services. One of the things that Christine is going to talk about is the Foxconn debacle. You may recall this story going back to the early days of the Trump administration, when Trump, along with Scott Walker, then governor of Wisconsin, announced that Foxconn Technology was going to build a huge plant in Wisconsin. And for that, they were getting a lot of tax breaks. I mean, like $4.8 billion. It was the largest incentive package in the country at the time. Well, none of it really panned out. The New Deal has been downsized on jobs by 89%. And Good Jobs First was quick to say, you know what, we told you about this. You don't do this kind of thing. And they're really big on coming down on states that try to lure corporations from other states with tax incentives. And there's no new jobs created. All they're doing is shifting jobs from one state to another. In this case, they were supposed to create a bunch of jobs in Wisconsin. Unfortunately, the local communities are getting screwed on this one, especially those who live in the village of Mount Pleasant and Racine County. Now, they gave up a lot of tax incentives to deal with the land acquisition and, you know, the layout of the what was supposed to happen there. And that money, it's not coming back. So we'll touch on that. There's a couple of other issues, depending on time, we'll get into involving students and how much has been cut in state budgets, which has screwed over school systems all around America. And Good Jobs First, if you go to the website, goodjobsfirst.org, they do a state-by-state analysis of tax breaks and how they affect their respective communities. Amazing work. And, you know, frankly, this is the kind of work that journalists should be doing. But we have seen the demise of journalism in this country, and as a result, you see nonprofits like Good Jobs First doing that kind of work. So Christine Wynn will be joining us later in the show. Kroger Grocery Company CEO Rodney McMullen cut COVID-19 hazard pay for food workers last year, just months into the pandemic. And then, you ready for this? He scooped up a record $22.4 million in compensation for himself. What a great guy. McMullen's pay package was revealed last Thursday in a regulatory filing. His compensation rose almost 6% from the prior year, padded by a bigger bonus, a hike in salary, plus stock. Medium pay, in the meantime, for Kroger's workers fell 8% to an annual $24,600. Kroger's full-time workers, however, did get a bonus a year ago. That was $300. The company, based in Cincinnati, employs about 465,000 people. Now, McMullen, earlier last year, proudly announced a $2 hourly hazard increase, hazard pay they called it, which he called a hero bonus for store and warehouse employees who continue to work in the midst of the pandemic. However, that didn't last very long. The bonus was cut in May, a year ago, May 2020, even as COVID-19 surged, sparking a storm of controversy. Bloomberg, in their report, said the hazard pay is disappearing. The hazard is not. How do you go from hero to zero when there's still a pandemic out there? Asked one worker. Well, Kroger has closed stores this year rather than comply with several city ordinances requiring hazard pay for grocery store workers. Quote, Kroger continues to reward and recognize our associates for their incredible work during this historic time, a spokesman told Bloomberg in an emailed statement in response to the company's extremely top-heavy reward system. The spokesperson noted that the company is also offering $100 to everyone who gets a COVID-19 vaccine. How nice of them. Well, things haven't been tough all over during the COVID-19 pandemic for CEOs and the ultra-rich. According to Bloomberg, billionaires got 54% richer last year, which is a $4 trillion boost for the world's 2,365 billionaires. Median pay for CEOs at more than 300 of the nation's largest companies zoomed to $13.7 million last year. That's up from $12.8 million a year before. Kroger raked in record revenue last year as people largely stopped eating out, boosted their grocery shopping. But CEOs running companies that hemorrhage money also did well, even though Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings lost $4 billion last year. Guess what? Their CEO, Frank Del Rio, his pay doubled to $36.4 million. Go figure. You know, Wall Street's the only area where you can really screw up or do bad and make more money. And in Kroger's case, hey, let's just cut that pay. Hero to zero. I like that. I know the employees don't like that, but at least it's a good line. My God, that is absolutely ridiculous. All right, well, let's move on here. The number of initial state unemployment claims decreased by 34,000 last week, resulting in a weekly adjusted total of 473,000 claims. Despite this sign that the labor market is beginning to heal, economists are nonetheless worried for certain industries. Job applications are actually down, and hiring has stalled. In the meantime, Ohio's Governor Mike DeWine has announced he will decline federal unemployment assistance that provides jobless workers an extra $300 a week during the pandemic. That is going to start on June 26th. So the move makes Ohio the latest Republican-led state to reject the federal money. Other states include Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, Montana, South Carolina, and Wyoming. I'm hearing Tennessee is also going to go in that direction. DeWine said that employers in retail, restaurants, manufacturing, and other sectors have told him they're struggling to find workers, and this is what he said. That extra $300 a week in federal pandemic unemployment compensation is, in some cases, discouraging people from going back at this point in time. And a number on the conservative side has said the same thing. However, progressive organizations, they're not too happy about this. They say the wages have not kept pace with corporate profits and productivity. I mean, you just heard me talk about Kroger. And if employers were really serious about needing employees, you know what you do? Raise the pay! Nan Whaley is the mayor of Dayton, Ohio, and she is running for governor as a Democrat next year, 2022. Nan said, as we come out of this crisis, the problem facing Ohioans is the same one we had before the coronavirus. Wages are too low, she said in a statement. One good job should be enough. And for too many of our friends and neighbors, it isn't. Mike DeWine is turning down money that could help Ohioans because he's worried about politics. When I'm governor, I'll be worried about paychecks. And keep in mind, you know who really gets screwed on this are the gig workers, because they are misclassified as independent contractors. And when you're an independent contractor, you don't get the state benefits. So they're the ones that are going to lose out on that $300 a week. And you know they're not Ubering as much as they used to, although it is picking up, but still. All right, we have to take a break. You are listening to America's Workforce. Coming up next, the National Treasury Employees Union.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more.
Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency. ULAgency.org is our website. ULA celebrating 50 years this year. All right, let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show. Had this guy on a number of times. Checking in to see how he's doing with the National Treasury Employees Union, NTEU.org is their website. And Tony Reardon is the president. Hey, Tony, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Hey, Flash, how are you? It is great to be back.
Last time you and I talked, I remember it was right after the insurrection, although that really didn't happen, from what I'm told. A couple members of Congress said that that was just blown up. It was just a regular tourist day in Washington. But I'm not going to get into that. But I remember you were driving around in an armed camp there after what happened on January 6th. And then Biden might have been inaugurated the following day. I can't recall exactly, but the show was in January. And obviously, with this new administration, I'm sure things are changing. I'd like to get your perspective. What's changed since President Biden has taken over?
Well, Flash, you're exactly right. There certainly has been a change. And I think probably the place to start this conversation is really that now, finally, there is a tone of respect for public service. And really, it starts at the president and moves on down. And they, you know, they often speak about the value of the frontline federal workforce and what it is that they bring to the federal government. And career civil servants are sort of seen as partners versus being the enemy, which is what the last administration, quite frankly, seemed to treat them like. Now, I'll tell you the first evidence that I had, or the first sign maybe, that there was going to be a change was there were several cabinet level folks who, before they were actually confirmed, Flash, picked up the telephone. And this is really unheard of. In the 32 years I've been at NTEU, I've not personally witnessed this, where folks, before they were actually confirmed, picked up the phone and called me just to check in and let me know how much they were interested in building a relationship with not only me, but with our union and frontline employees. And moreover, they wanted to know, so what are the problems that frontline federal employees are experiencing, and how can I help, is essentially the question they were asking. And that was certainly a sign to me that, okay, these folks are ready to get in here. They're taking very seriously their role as being responsible for managing and leading frontline employees, and we're going to have a real change in the discourse. And I will tell you, even once they got confirmed, that certainly has continued. So I am really extraordinarily pleased that the president has obviously made clear to his cabinet that that's what he wants. He wants a pro-union administration. And he himself has done several things. He's gotten rid of several executive orders. I know in the past, Flash, we talked about. And you know, the Schedule F executive order he got rid of, and the three from 2018 that were really candidly designed to weaken unions, limit collective bargaining, and take away employee rights and benefits. So, yeah, we've seen a dramatic change for the positive.
Well, Tony, if there's one thing that President Biden has shown us, he has shown us that the government can be efficient. It can work. And this goes back years when you take a look at the Reagan administration. Remember when Reagan said, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you? And everybody kind of laughed about that. And ever since then, there's been this chopping away and chopping away. And you can speak to this, too, because your budget has been chopped away, especially when it comes to the IRS. But that's good to hear. That's good to hear. What about bargaining? You've got some outreach upon members of the cabinet. Where do you stand with contracts at various agencies?
Well, you know, what I would say is that, you know, for the most part, the damage that we saw done with the last administration has been reversed. You know, two of our biggest contracts, which are IRS and CBP, they were untouched because we actually had a contract in each of those agencies in place in the last administration. But, you know, we definitely had some agencies that tried to use the former president's executive orders to inflict some real damage, candidly, when those contracts came open. And, you know, what we're seeing now is that the tactics that had been employed by the last administration and the agencies that were being led by the last administration have been really abandoned. And so now we are finally in a situation where we can return to normal bargaining with agencies, and they have been instructed by the administration to negotiate in good faith, as the law requires. Imagine that.
Right.
And, you know, things like union office space and access to agency email systems, those things have been restored. So, you know, I would say that in answer to your question, that so far things have started to show as being very positive with the current administration. And, you know, where the former president put his thumb on the scale for management, President Biden has essentially restored balance. And, you know, many of the anti-union ideologues that Trump put on various boards and commissions involved in the federal workplace and involved in federal workplace issues, they've been shown the door. And so we expect the few who remain to shortly follow. And then any labor management disputes will be heard by fair-minded people who understand the civil service laws. So that's obviously all important. And so things are starting to turn, as I said, for the better.
Tony, what kind of impact has this had on the employees at various agencies? I mean, you've got 34 different departments and agencies that you deal with. I can only assume that everybody's got to feel pretty darn good right now, right?
Well, you know, I think for the most part, I would say, though, that, you know, we still have a couple of situations where the agency hasn't moved as quickly as we would have liked. They're moving in the right direction, but, you know, sometimes these huge agencies like Health and Human Services, they're a bit like the a battleship, right? They're a little slow to turn around in the harbor. So we're having to continue to push in some instances. But on the whole, Flash, what I would say is that I think employees are starting to see that certainly the leadership of our chapters in agencies are starting to see that this is a different type of leadership with the Biden administration. But look, let's face it. I mean, you know, like I know, until frontline employees actually see a change in their work lives, a change in their management structure, you know, that their supervisors are changing the way that they conduct themselves, you know, they're not really in a position to see some of the good things happening. So that's why it's incumbent upon us at the national level and also in the leadership and chapter level to make sure that we are pushing through all the way through the agency, on down through the agency, so that frontline managers are doing the right thing too. So it's still early. We're still pushing hard. But yes, we are starting to see some positive change.
Good, good, good. Okay, what about teleworking? I know because of the pandemic, you have a lot less people in the office. Now that things seem to be getting better, where are we with all that, Tony?
Yeah, in most agencies, frontline federal employees are teleworking. And so I'm thinking about places like EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, SSA, SEC, where, the workforce shifted immediately to maximum telework. And I've got to tell you, one of the things I've always been certainly supportive of telework, but one of the impacts that I never imagined was that telework would save lives. And certainly with the pandemic, it did that with frontline employees, their families, and their communities. Now, in some agencies like the IRS, some work obviously cannot be done at home. It's not portable. And, when you think about the actual work with the paper tax returns, unfortunately, that cannot be done at a telework site. And so they started being called back last summer. And I'll tell you, that was rough as the agency had to figure out ways to keep people safe, with PPE and cleaning and social distancing, so on and so forth. And then in some places, Flash, like in Customs and Border Protection, CBP, most jobs obviously cannot be done on telework. So you have CBP officers and agriculture specialists and others that had to be in our ports of entry, whether it was airports, seaports, land border crossings, so on and so forth. They had to be there every day processing travelers and inspecting cargo. And so, unfortunately, telework was not an option for them. But many employees across the federal government continue to telework right now.
Very good. All right, Tony, I got to take a quick break here. Tony Reardon is joining us. He is president of the National Treasury Employees Union, which is the nation's largest independent union of federal employees. They represent 150,000 workers in 34 departments and agencies. One of those departments is the IRS. Today is tax day. It got postponed due to the pandemic. And we're going to check in to see how the IRS employees are doing. They've had a lot of budget cuts over the years. Later in the show, Christine Wen will be joining us on behalf of the organization Good Jobs First. She's going to talk about a project in Wisconsin that kind of fell apart and left a few taxpayers on the hook. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange, news, talk, sports, and workforce politics, the fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Hi, I'm Dr. Candace Jones with the American Academy of Pediatrics. I know we're all looking forward to getting back to life after the pandemic. That's why now is the time to get your kids caught up on their childhood vaccines, so they'll be protected from things like measles and meningitis when the world starts to open up again. When you call your pediatrician to schedule their checkup, it's a superhero moment. Call your pediatrician today.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget, we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Tony Reardon. Tony's president of the National Treasury Employees Union. Forgot to mention, they're on Facebook as well as Twitter. Your Twitter handle is at NTEU News. NTEU News. Do check them out. Tony, I want to talk to you about the IRS. Today is tax day, as I indicated a couple times already on the show. Got postponed because of the pandemic. IRS agency has been kind of beat up over the years when it comes to funding. And I came across a statistic a couple of months ago. And I think this was at some testimony in Washington. If the IRS was able to collect everything that was due, we're talking almost $1 trillion. And I'm thinking, boy, Biden's going around talking about this infrastructure plan. That's almost half of it right there. If they would just collect what is due. So tell me what's going on here. It's all because they just don't have enough personnel. What's the story here?
Well, you know, it's a combination of things, Flash, actually. And you mentioned some testimony. And actually, what you're referring to, you're exactly right, was testimony by IRS Commissioner Chuck Rettig. And he did testify that he believes that the tax gap is probably in the neighborhood of $1 trillion per year, which is significantly larger than the previous estimates. So let's take a look at this. From 2010 to 2020, overall agency funding decreased by more than 22% when adjusted for inflation. And as a result of that, the agency has 15,000 fewer employees now than it did just 11 years ago. So those cuts have really led to a decrease in enforcement work because there are fewer revenue agents and revenue officers, which means that it has gotten harder to catch people or businesses that cheat on their taxes. So this is an important one. Audit rates on millionaires fell by 80% between 2011 and 2018. This obviously, all of this together, combined together, really causes two primary problems. The first one is that taxpayers, you know, when they see this cheating going on and people getting away with it, taxpayers lose confidence in our tax system. And the second thing is that the diminished enforcement means that there's money that is rightfully owed to the government that's not being collected. And that, you know, so that's known as the tax gap, the amount of money owed but not collected. So, you know, this figure this $1 trillion figure that the commissioner testified about, you know, it's gotten a lot of attention in Congress. And so now what you see is you see both parties are now talking about ways to reduce the tax gap and improve customer service. So the president's American Families Plan would add $80 billion over 10 years for enforcement at the IRS. And so what this ultimately means is that, you know, we could see hiring in the thousands in terms of new revenue agents and revenue officers, which would beef up customer service and modernizing the agency's outdated technology. I mentioned the technology because it's not only, you know, when I talk about funding, clearly we need more employees, but we also at the IRS need much improved, newer technology so that these employees can, do the work that they really need to do. So I was very, very, very pleased to see that the administration's FY22 budget outline includes a $1.2 billion or 10% increase in the base funding for the IRS.
In the American Families Plan, you mentioned $80 billion over 10 years. I'm just wondering, right, is that enough? And you have to keep in mind, too, that's an investment. You hire more people, you're going to get more revenue coming in. And people have to understand that. But that $80 billion, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I mean, I think, you know, from my perspective, it is a I think it's a really good first step towards rebuilding the IRS's capacity, you know, including taxpayer services and enforcement. But, you know, ultimately, the, for example, the $1.2 billion that I mentioned, you know, it still leaves overall funding of about $2 billion a year below 2010 levels, adjusted for inflation. So, you know, I think that the shortfalls that exist in funding at the IRS right now, Flash, are so large that the problem cannot be solved solely through the year-to-year appropriations. I think it is incredibly important for the government to undertake a multi-year process of hiring and training staff and upgrading systems that is absolutely critical in order to restore the IRS's capacity. And so we believe that the IRS must be provided additional funding that is predictable and sustained over a period of several years. Because without the predictability that I'm talking about in funding, the IRS cannot effectively plan and execute a long-term hiring strategy and IT overhaul that is so desperately needed. And so if the agency doesn't know where the funding will come or if it is going to be in a steady form, then, you know, it really cannot support its commitments that it would need to make, you know, in order to increase staffing and upgrade its technology. So this is something that the IRS needs to know is happening so they can appropriately plan.
I'm still blown away by that figure you told me, 80%. That's the amount that audits have fallen over, what was that? What time period was that? The last 10 years when they kept cutting the budget?
It was, and so let me be clear about the 80%. It was audit rates on millionaires fell by 80% between 2011 and 2018.
Wow. Wow.
Good to be a millionaire, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. My God. Oh, my God. All right, Tony, I got one more question here before we go. And I noticed this last week. I was talking about the American Federation of Government Employees doing some organizing. They had a bang-up month. And they, like you, have been beat up in the last administration. They organized about 3,000 members in 1 month. I'm just wondering where you are with that, because, as you know, there's a different climate out there. You got a pro-union president out there. What are you hearing so far?
Yeah, I mean, our, you know, it's too early to tell exactly how things are going. But, you know, based on the data that we have coming in, we're seeing the same kind of growth. I mean, we're clearly growing. I think people are feeling, you know, much, much better about being federal employees. Again, I got to tell you, over the last 4 years, the morale in federal agencies had dropped to levels, you know, not seen before. And so there were people that were just looking to get out. They wanted to retire. They wanted to move into other jobs. And, you know, I think the civil service was, you know, not looking so great to people, and they wanted to find alternative ways to make a living. What I'm starting to see now is that, you know, people are saying, whoa, 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 okay, look, we're starting to be shown a little bit of respect again as federal employees. And so I think they're starting to get engaged with their union. I've seen a level of engagement even of our members in recent months that I've not seen in a long time. And so I think that does then sort of transition to non-members out there who are saying, whoa, I want a piece of this too. I want to be a part of this organization. I think, you know, we're doing some good work. And so they're seeing that, and they're saying, hey, we want to be, you know, people want to join things that are positive and good. And they're starting to see that. And apparently AFG as well. And so are we. So I think that speaks well of the labor movement. And I think it's probably happening in other areas outside of the federal government in terms of union organizing as well. So that's all very positive for the union movement.
Good stuff. Oh, yeah. Even in right-to-work states in the South, we're seeing pockets of organizing. Yeah, it's a different world out there. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right, my brother, I'm going to let you go. Tony Reardon, president of the National Treasury Employees Union. You can find more at NTEU.org. You take care, stay safe, and let's check in about 3-4 months, okay?
Absolutely, Flash. Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Christine Wynn will be joining us on behalf of Good Jobs First.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly and Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly and Ferraro, trial lawyers.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show, Christine Wynn. Christine is a project coordinator for a fabulous organization. Been around since the late 90s. Good Jobs First. Website is goodjobsfirst.org. Her current work focuses on government disclosure of tax abatements and their impact on public services. And I want to tell you, she is a scholar. She got her master's degree from Columbia University and a PhD in city and regional planning from Cornell University. So I tell you, we've got, like I said, quite a scholar joining us on our next segment. Christine Wynn, welcome back to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So you want to talk about how students pay for corporate tax breaks. And this is a report that came out, I believe, in March at Good Jobs First. And it shows the high cost of corporate tax abatements to schools. And you break it down state by state. This is fabulous. It really is fabulous. And I indicated before, this is something you would expect journalists, the media, to do. But the media has been chopped back severely over the years, and that's why we have organizations like Good Jobs First. So talk to me about what you came up with, because we're talking about a lot of money here. I'm reading, what is it, $2.4 billion? Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, so this study was a massive undertaking that involved looking at over 10,000 PDF documents of government financial reports in fiscal year 2019, and we came up with a $2.4 billion in foregone tax revenue for school districts. And that's $273 million, or 13% more than 2017, so just 2 years earlier.
I'm reading the losses were widespread. 97 school districts lost more than $5 million each. 149 districts lost more than $1,000 per student, which obviously left less money for students who suffered poorer schools, caused families to pay higher local state taxes. And we've seen that all the time. When budgets are cut on education, then they have to go to the local communities to raise revenue. And often those communities say no, because we're strapped here. We can't pay anymore. So what's happening here? Is this primarily due to giveaways to corporations who move to those respective states? What are you finding?
Yes, so that's exactly it. So the state that reported the highest revenue loss is South Carolina. And South Carolina has these programs. One of these programs is called a fee in lieu of taxes. And it basically lets businesses pay a fee at a very reduced, at a rate that's equal to like a very reduced property tax. So reduced assessment ratio and reduced millage rate. And these agreements can last 30 years with the possibility of a 10-year extension. And it even allows for further extension for very large investment. And on top of that, it can be bundled with property tax credits and even more tax benefits if these projects are located in what's called multi-county industrial parks. So it's huge tax discounts for businesses, for certain type of businesses that are located in South Carolina. And South Carolina alone reported $423 million abated for public school districts in fiscal year, just in fiscal year 2019. And similar in Louisiana, also reported, I think, $269 million. And I think there's another $100 million unaccounted for because of this one parish school board that didn't provide a figure. And this is because of the program known as the Industrial Tax Exemption Program, which is actually granted by the state. And until very recently, school districts just have absolutely no say in whether they can, you know, how much they can be part of this. And they just, you know, they just get their taxes sort of carved out of it every year. And these programs have been immensely damaging to public schools.
I'm reading in Nevada, the Story County School District reported the highest per pupil foregone revenue, over $35,000. That's a chunk. And why is that?
It's
because of Tesla Motors, is that right?
Yes, so the Story County School District is sort of, you know, in the remote area, has just a few hundred students, but it has the Tesla project over there, and the state offers these, I think, through five programs, the aerospace, what's called the standard exemption program. I think there's renewable energy. I can't remember exactly what the combination of programs that are offered, but yeah, they added up to a huge amount.
87 New York school districts lost between $1 million and $10 million. That was in fiscal year 2019, and three of those lost over $10 million, all in relatively poor districts, affecting primarily Black and Latino students. Now, talk to me about California. Now, I'm reading, in California, they're misinterpreting the rule on taxes. Can you explain what the problem is there in California?
Yeah, so California is one of the 23 states that we just don't have any data on. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, because the $2.4 billion is really an incomplete estimate of the taxes, the revenue loss. I mean, it's incomplete in the sense that there's no data from these 23 states and D.C. It's complete. And that it was all that was reported. I mean, we dug out everything there was to dig out. But in places in California, in California's case, because school districts are not independent taxing jurisdictions, they say that they cannot really figure out exactly what the school's portion of the abated taxes are, because, you know, it's the counties that, you know, kind of apportion the tax revenue. But, you know, but that's actually not the case, because in 2017, you know, out of like the almost 1,000 school districts in California, we actually found four districts that actually reported their tax abatements. You know, so that actually proves that it's possible to figure out the school's portion of the lost revenue. But we're told by the by someone in the controller's office, I believe, that it was impossible to figure out. And so and there was a sort of similar problem in states where school districts are component units of counties or cities, like in Tennessee. And in some other states, we also have school districts that just don't produce financial reports. So we're not getting any kind of financial reporting. And then we also have the problem of it's a bigger problem with the how the accounting rule is specified right now. It kind of lets places that like to interpret the rule in such a way that they don't report things like industrial revenue bonds, which kind of bend the definition of tax abatements. It's like the government holds the title of property and leases back to the company and making the property tax exempt. So like it's kind of a way of like sort of reducing property tax. But you know, and so we kind of have all these problems that makes like this tax abatement disclosure is incomplete.
Well, I'll tell you, this is a lot of work, so my hat's off to you on putting this all together with your team over there at Good Jobs First. Again, South Carolina reported more K-12 losses than any other state, $423 million in abated revenues. I know a lot of that has to do with Boeing, because Boeing located there. When the governor at the time, Nikki Haley, was there, she gave away everything to make sure that they would locate there. And now we're seeing the effects of it. In the state of Ohio, Ohio lost $134 million. And if you go to goodjobsfirst.org, you can click on each state to see how much money was given to corporations. Christine, how long did it take you to put this report together?
It took about six months. And a lot of time was spent just sort of collecting the data and even more time analyzing it. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about New York, about the school district that lost more are also relatively poor ones. And I just want to add a little bit more to that, is that we also found this in several other places as well. And it seems to be a trend, a pattern. The poor districts sort of suffer the most. We found this in South Carolina. We definitely found this in New York, and in fact, Kansas City Public Schools, the superintendent of the district noticed this even before we did a study that, you know, his district, which 80%, I think, of the students are a black or Hispanic, and they abated 2,000, or their Kansas City rather, abated 2,000 per pupil, while the surrounding sort of white neighborhoods abated only like $7 or some very small amount per pupil.
Wow.
And we see that kind of discrepancy quite a bit throughout a lot of different places. So that is very concerning.
Rob the poor to pay the rich. That's essentially what's going on in America. Christine, great job on this. Thank you so much. Christine Nguyen, Project Coordinator for Good Jobs First. And you can find more, like I said, at that website, goodjobsfirst.org. You take care, and thank you for joining us, and stay safe, all right?
Thank you.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Ohio Federation of Teachers and Randy Weingarten will be joining us. She is president of the American Federation of Teachers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.